a big backlog in immigration court, the housing squeeze after Irma, and how the storm may have helped sea life but hurt those making a living from the sea. Welcome to the Florida Roundup on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson. Thousands of immigrants waiting for their day in U.S. court in Miami have seen their cases delayed. Immigration judges here have been shuffled to other jurisdictions, even as the backlog of asylum cases here grows. How bad is the backlog? How does the immigration focus of the Trump administration affect these hearings here? The NBC 6 reporter behind the investigation will join us on the roundup. Even before Hurricane Irma, it was tough to work and live in the Keys. Jobs in the tourism industry pay less than average in Monroe County, while housing costs are high. Now, with the county's stock of mobile homes considered destroyed, the housing crunch in the Keys goes from bad to worse. All that and your phone calls next on the Florida Roundup.
Is formerly known as the Affordable
Care Act. Technical difficulties
the requirement
right now
that contraceptive coverage
network.
Be included in most employers' health care plans has been controversial from the start. Although medical experts recommended birth control be included, along with other preventive services, Catholic bishops and others objected. The previous administration offered a limited carve-out for church groups with religious objections, but the requirement still prompted dozens of lawsuits. In one of those, the Hobby Lobby case, the Supreme Court ruled closely held corporations don't have to provide birth control coverage. The Trump administration is now going further and extending a religious opt-out to virtually any employer. Officials say they still expect most workplace policies will cover contraceptives. Scott Horsley, NPR News, the White House.
The first figures are out on the economic toll of Hurricanes Harvey and Irma in Texas and Florida. The Labor Department says the U.S. lost 33,000 jobs in September after thousands of businesses were forced to close and the hurricanes prompted widespread evacuations. This was the first monthly hiring decline in 7 years. Economist Diane Swong says the picture will look much different when it comes to Puerto Rico, a U.S. territory that endured considerable damage from Irma and far worse when Hurricane Maria swept through.
Puerto Rico is a U.S. territory, therefore it does not count in the national employment statistics nor the national GDP figures, despite the devastation we saw there. When it does show up in the U.S. figures is when those people from Puerto Rico migrate from the island to the mainland, which we expect this to precipitate one of the largest migrations we've seen in recent history.
The island's energy grid is destroyed. It could take several months before power is fully restored. Meanwhile, the death toll continues to rise in Puerto Rico. Governor Ricardo Rosselló has announced at least 36 deaths since Maria struck the island more than 2 weeks ago. Vice President Mike Pence will be visiting Puerto Rico later today. This hour, he's touring the hurricane damage in the U.S. Virgin Islands. In other news, Australian police are assisting their U.S. counterparts in their investigation of Mary Lou Danley. She's the girlfriend of the gunman who carried out last Sunday's shooting massacre in Las Vegas. She's a naturalized Australian citizen who is a person of interest. She has not been charged with any crimes. Investigators have been questioning her, hoping to learn more about what might have caused her boyfriend to carry out the worst mass shooting in modern U.S. history. Danley was out of the country at the time of the attack. She says she had no inkling that her boyfriend was planning that act of violence that claimed at least 58 lives and left hundreds more injured. You're listening to NPR News. The state of Hawaii is challenging the latest travel ban from the Trump administration. Hawaii Public Radio's Bill Dorman reports this sets up a direct confrontation later this month.
This is the third time Hawaii is challenging President Trump's travel restrictions. Less than 2 weeks ago, Trump issued a presidential proclamation that would block travel to the United States by most citizens from seven countries, including North Korea, as well as some officials from Venezuela. Hawaii's Attorney General Doug Chin says the move still discriminates on the basis of nationality. It still exceeds the president's legal authority, and it still seeks to implement his Muslim ban.
Bill Dorman reporting. Members of the UK's Conservative Party are urging Prime Minister Theresa May to quit. NPR's Frank Langfitt reports from London. The move follows a disastrous speech this week in which she battled through coughing fits and was embarrassed by a prankster.
Former party chair Grant Shapps says at least 30 Conservative members of Parliament want May out. Under party rules, it only takes 48 to trigger a leadership contest. This week, May tried to reassert her authority over her party after losing her majority in parliament in the summer election that she herself called. In the midst of her speech at an annual party meeting, a prankster handed her a mock pink slip. Then she repeatedly lost her voice. For now, May's senior party colleagues are publicly rallying around her. Conservatives fear a leadership battle now could trigger another national election, which they worry they'd lose to a resurgent Labour Party as the government tries to negotiate its departure from the European Union. Frank Langford, NPR News, London.
I'm Lakshmi Singh, NPR News in Washington.
Support for NPR comes from the financial services firm of Raymond James, offering personalized wealth management advice and banking and capital markets expertise, along with a legacy of putting clients' financial well-being first. Learn more at RaymondJames.com.
Hanley Center at Origins pioneered addiction treatment for baby boomers and older adults. A community partner for over 30 years, Hanley Center at Origins provides nationally acclaimed addiction treatment and accepts insurance. More at OriginsRecovery.com or 844-3-HANLEY.
Hi, this is Ray from Car Talk. You know, for the last 30 years, you've had to put up with this. And we know it's been a struggle. Well, it's time for Car Talk to make room on this station for something new and hopefully a little more professional. You can still listen to us online, but here on the station, we hope you enjoy the next generation of great programs. And thanks.
The New Yorker Radio Hour moves to Saturdays at 10 starting in October.
Welcome to the Florida Roundup on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks for listening this week. It takes a year and a half for an immigrant in South Florida to see a judge in an asylum hearing. The backlog of hearings nationwide has been growing for years, and here in South Florida, about half the delay of cases over the past year have been postponed because the Justice Department has sent immigration judges from here to other places as the Trump administration has focused on asylum hearings in border towns.
There's a judge that has moved my case 5 times already.
That's Miami immigration attorney Sandy Panera. She spoke to NBC6 and Telemundo for its investigation into the court backlog. Judge Dana Lee Marks is the president of the National Association of Immigration Judges. She also spoke to NBC6 and Telemundo.
There have been initiatives both under the Obama administration and under the Trump administration that have resulted in us as judges being required to shuffle our docket.
Shuffle the immigration asylum docket in South Florida. Do you have a family member or friend who's been waiting for their asylum hearing? How have the immigration priorities of the Trump administration and previously the Obama administration impacted immigration hearings here? And what's the impact on these cases and the immigrants and their families hoping to stay here in the United States and here in South Florida? This is where we begin this week on the Florida Roundup. You can take part, 800-743-WLRN, toll-free throughout South Florida at 800-743-9576. On social media as well, look for us on Twitter at WLRN. Miriam Masehi is along with us, the consumer investigative reporter for both Telemundo 51 and NBC6. She investigated this immigration asylum hearing backlog, and she joins us from the Telemundo Network studios in Hialeah. Miriam, great work. Thanks for sharing it with us. What types of immigration hearings are we talking about with these backlogs?
Well, Tom, thanks so much for having me. We're talking about asylum hearings, any kind of immigration cases. Anytime you need to see an immigration judge here in South Florida, in Miami particularly, it's going to take you about a year and a half to get in front of a judge. In places like Chicago, it's 5 years. In Atlanta, more than 4 years. So that's having an impact on immigrants. And some people say, well, you know, they're allowed to stay in this country while they wait for that hearing. But according to Judge Dana Marks, that spoke to us as that head of the union, she says, well, in the meantime, their cases fall apart. Witnesses disappear. If you're asking for a child, that child may become an adult. If an elderly person is asking for somebody, they might pass away waiting for a hearing.
Yeah. How many cases are we talking about? How big is that backlog in South Florida for it to be 18 months long now?
Well, in South Florida, it is 31,219 cases are backlogged. Nationwide, it's 617,000 cases. And that's been increasing since 2009. It's almost doubled since 2009.
Yeah, the trajectory of this has been hockey stick. It's increased significantly. And it's not just the Trump administration, as your report points out. And you just mentioned it goes back to 2009, the beginning of the Obama administration. Are there policies within the Department of Justice that we can trace back to the change in administration from George W. Bush to President Obama that began to add to this backlog?
Well, the way Judge Marks explained it to us was it's the way the system is set up. The immigration court is not like an independent court, like tax court. Mm-hmm. It is under the Department of Justice. So every time a new administration steps in, they come with their policies and politics, and they decide what is priority. For example, this administration has decided that border cases are priority and that they want to tackle that backlog. And so these judges are being sent from cities like Miami and all over the country to detention facilities, most of them near the border, and they have to drop their cases. What she told us is those cases in the border sometimes aren't ready to be heard. So then they have to postpone those as well. So it continues to grow.
And so what is a potential solution? Is it more funding from Congress, more judges, or is it just keeping the judges in the places where they're sworn in?
Well, Congress already approved money to hire 65 more judge teams. Judge Mark says they need at least 200 more to even start improving the backlog. Wow. Attorney General Jeff Sessions directed the hiring process to be streamlined. But here's the catch. Immigration judges, they're not very easy to come by. It's very specific. And a lot of judges are nearing retirement.
Miriam Masihi is with us, consumer investigative reporter for Telemundo 51 and NBC 6. Her report about crisis in the courts detailing the backlog of immigration asylum cases here in South Florida and nationwide. Your phone calls, 800-743-9576. Immigration heavy South Florida with the backlog of 31,000 plus asylum hearing cases waiting to be heard. 800-743-9576. We'll begin in Miami. Maria, you are on the radio. Thanks for holding on. What's your story?
Hi, how are you?
Good. Tell us.
Well, my boyfriend's Venezuelan, and he's under political asylum, and he's been waiting for 3 years for an answer. He got an extension. However, we still don't have any kind of news, no answer, no court date, nothing, and it's kind of a limbo. It's really annoying.
And so what's been the impact? What is he doing? What are you doing in the meantime?
Well, he has a TBI. He has a permit to work, so he can do that. But we can't travel. We can't plan for the future. We can't think of marriage because of how it'll impact his court case, if anything. I know it's the easy solution, but again, it's not the best solution because we don't want it to look to any court that because he's under asylum, he can get married and that'll solve things.
And what are you hearing from? Are you working with immigration lawyers?
He is, but, you know, everything's just at a standstill, nothing, no news, nothing, just, oh, no, your court date's pending.
Maria in Miami, thanks for that story. Miriam, that kind of limbo is something that you heard quite a bit about.
A lot. And what happens is in some of these cases, if they left family behind in dangerous situations, the judge was saying this could be a life or death situation. So if you're waiting for your asylum hearing here and you're waiting to bring your family member over, that family member is in great danger.
And so, you know, for Maria and her boyfriend, 3 years waiting, but still no red X on the calendar, no date set, no docket printed out for at least some kind of sense of moving forward with these cases. Where are the families left?
Well, the judge said that people who have attorneys have a better chance at getting their cases heard. But honestly, it is a sit and wait situation because even the attorneys we spoke to say, you know, they're getting ready for a hearing and all of a sudden they get a little notice that it was canceled and they have to call in and say, what happened? Oh, the judge got sent to the border again. So it's not really up to them in many cases.
Yeah, it's up to what? The Department of Justice is the group that essentially reassigns these immigration attorneys? Is that where the decision comes from?
Yes, it was the Department of Justice who directed these judges to take these. They're like 2 weeks at a time, but they're being sent a lot. Like we had 13 judges sent in the last few months. Nationwide, 139 judges were temporarily reassigned to these detention centers, mostly to places like Otero, New Mexico and Polk, Texas. So in the meantime,
border towns,
your case
yeah,
is here.
The land
yes.
border towns. Meantime, you know, Florida,
exactly.
Obviously on the coast here with our water border. You know, we see immigrants coming in and declaring asylum most frequently in our airports.
That's correct. In the border, though, we did see as part of our investigation, there has been a decrease in apprehensions at the southern border. Those went down considerably. And we spoke to Border Patrol agents. They say basically it was following the catch and release announcement where they said they were no longer going to practice catch and release. But that they say the money has not come into that operation to fund that. So they suspect that's going to go back up as well.
Miriam, I'm wondering if we've seen and you were able to pick up any more recent change in the volume of asylum cases since the end of the wet foot, dry foot treatment of Cubans.
We did not break that down. We got our last FOIA, a Freedom of Information Act, last Friday, and we wanted to break as much down as possible and get this to our viewers and now our listeners as fast as possible. We did break down the last 10 months of the fiscal year, this first fiscal year, from October 1st to July 31st, and we noted that in those 10 months, we had an increase of almost 100,000 cases added to the backlog. Now, where they break down South Florida-wise and wet foot, dry foot policy, then that's a further breakdown.
Sure. Have you been able to tease out of the data if those are new cases or just getting captured again, that they may have been in the system for a good long time?
They're called as they call them adjourned. Half of them were called adjourned, and which is usually a continuance, a delay.
For the immigration court system here in South Florida to be full strength, what would that look like, and you know, any idea of what it would take to clear up the 31,000 plus cases that are in backlog?
Well, a judge was telling me, Judge Marks was telling us that she has 3,000 cases in her docket, and she should have only 1,000. So we would need a lot more judges.
Every case is different, of course. And whenever I ask this question, I know I'm going to get the answer. It depends. But what is an average time for an asylum case to work through the immigration system?
Well, the average time to work through the immigration system depends on where you are.
For the
asylum process right now, it's a year and a half, and you just heard somebody for 3 years.
Yeah.
And there has been no average what it should take. I think they all are very different depending on the evidence. But what it's taking right now here locally, an average is a year and a half. That's the average.
18 months. Quick call here. I want to go to Nikki in Fort Lauderdale. I know, Miriam, you've got squeezed on time. Let's go ahead and bring Nikki in quickly. Nikki, your thoughts from Fort Lauderdale. Go ahead. You're on the radio.
Oh, that was quick. I was just saying I have an acquaintance who at 25 years old came to the United States on a shopping spree, overstayed her visit, decided she wanted to stay, and got married to somebody. She never consummated the marriage, and the husband turned her into the authorities. At 25 years old, no criminal record, never having done anything wrong except this, probably. She spent a year incarcerated with no representation, no money to get representation. Eventually, someone that was already there had an attorney, and the attorney took pity on her, represented her, and she was released eventually. But I mean, what I said, can you imagine your own child at 25 years old becoming incarcerated in the United States? How wonderful. You know, I mean, this whole system needs to be revamped.
Yeah. Nikki,
how do we? Yes,
we appreciate you sharing that story with us. There's a lot of them in South Florida. Thank you for calling in. And you know, we reached out to some immigration court folks as well, Miriam, and they tell us the judges volunteer for details at these surge locations, that they're not assigned to it.
There was an initial memo out to volunteer, but then there was a follow-up memo that we obtained that said, well, now we're going to need more judges, so you have to pick 8 weeks where you don't want to be sent. So as opposed to I volunteer now, which 8 weeks do you want to stay home?
Miriam Masihi is a consumer investigative reporter for both Telemundo 51 and NBC 6. She investigated the crisis in the court for immigration asylum hearing backlogs here in South Florida, joining us today on the Florida Roundup from the Telemundo Network studios in Hialeah. Miriam, great to have you on the program. Thanks for sharing your work with us.
Thank you so much, Tom.
Stick around. We got more to come on the Florida Roundup, but we're going to move back to the Keys. Lots of coverage there because of Hurricane Irma, the potential housing crisis in the Keys after the storm. Are you having trouble finding housing? Are you going to visit the Keys to help out after the storm? Let us know. 800-743-WLRN. Call us now. The phone's open. 800-743-9576 as the Roundup continues after this.
You're invited to join WLRN for the hottest and hippest literary ticket, the Moth Miami Story Slam, Tuesday, October 10th, 7 p.m. at the historic Olympia Theater's Lobby Lounge in downtown Miami. It will be a special evening of true stories told live. This month's theme, creepy, stories about the things that spook you. Storytellers from our community compete for the votes of the audience. It's the Moth Story Slam, Tuesday at 7 p.m. Tickets available at the Olympia Theater box office or olympiatheater.org.
We're funded by WLRN members and by Florida City Gas. Homeowners can trust in a natural gas tank water heater to deliver warm water if a power outage occurs. Florida City Gas features energy efficiency appliance programs. Details are at floridacitygasrebates.com.
We're funded by WLRN members and by the law firm of Stearns Weaver Miller Weisler Aledeff and Citizen PA, supporting the Miami Foundation's 50th anniversary of fostering creativity through support of the arts and pursuit of new ideas. Learn more at miamifoundation.org/50.
We're back on the Florida Roundup here on WLRN. Thanks again for listening this week. In the Florida Keys, over half the jobs are related to tourism. That's why it was so important for the Keys to declare themselves back open for visitors earlier this week.
You're open for business. Restaurants are open. Hotels are open. Every tourist in the country and the world needs to come back to Key West and Florida Keys.
Governor Scott being pitchman for the Florida Keys there. The Keys may be back welcoming visitors, but scores of people working to serve, tend, and clean up for tourists do not have permanent homes. Hurricane Irma wiped out the Keys' mobile home supply and left thousands of full-time residents with damaged or destroyed homes. Now, even during good weather, it's tough to make a living and afford to live in the Keys. Average rents are well above the state average, while average wages are well below. Add the island geography, the lack of land, and tough building codes designed to have homes stand up to hurricanes, and Hurricane Irma threatens to make a housing crunch in the Keys a crisis. Nancy Klingener is our southernmost reporter here at WLRN with us on the mainland. Nancy, welcome back to WLRN in Miami. Good to see you in the studio.
Thanks, Tom.
Yeah, great to have you. David Ovalle back with us as well, reporter for our partner, the Miami Herald. David, always great to have you on the Roundup, too.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Nancy, you live in the Keys. You report on the Keys. David, you spent Hurricane Irma with Nancy in Key West and spent a lot of time reporting up and down the island chain over the past several weeks, as both of you have. Nancy, first of all, what's the current status of the Lower Keys? You drove through there this morning on your way here.
Yeah, and I was in Marathon and Big Pine Key yesterday, and the status is a lot of kind of demolition still, and, you know, taking out drywall and carpets and figuring out how to make sure your roof doesn't leak and figuring out where you're going to live for the next couple months.
What about the mobile homes? I was down there 9 days after the storm, and mobile home parks in the Torches, Big Pine, in those Lower Keys, those places where the eye came through, in Cudjoe, and those areas, decimated, destroyed, ripped apart. Anybody familiar with storm damage can visualize what that looks like. Has that cleanup even begun in some of those areas?
It has begun, but like everybody else in the state of Florida, we're having issues with debris removal. So, you know, you've got pieces of mobile homes and other, you know, all your belongings, and where do those go? And, you know, even beginning to make something new is pretty much impossible while that stuff is still around.
David Ovalle, what about replacement homes? I know that the county, just, what, a week and a half or so after the storm, was requesting FEMA trailers and mobile homes to come in to help house some of these folks.
Yeah, as of yet, there still isn't any large-scale FEMA housing available yet for a lot of the residents in the Keys who are displaced. 10 trailers came in last week, but as of right now, I have not heard that they're actually in place. They were still trying to figure out where to put them. And as of yet, there still isn't any greater number of them. So it's still, a lot of it's still in flux. There's a lot of dread. There's a lot of a lot of fear from these displaced residents who are worried that the FEMA funds for the hotels are going to run out, or they're going to get kicked out of the hotels as the tourists start coming back in. And there's going to be a lot of people that, and I've interviewed people who have lost workers who just said, you know what, I can't stay here anymore. I can't afford it. I don't know where I'm going to live. And being here, living in paradise is just going to be too much of a burden.
And it is the lifeblood of the Florida Keys, not only in the hospitality industry, but also in the fishing industry, sport fishing industry. Those mobile homes, those RVs, those multifamily complexes, a lot of places where the full-time residents live. But David, you're talking about fewer than a dozen homes and RVs coming in. The scale of the problem, I think, you know, county officials were telling me 7,500 mobile homes dotted the island chain before Hurricane Irma, all considered destroyed. And you've got 10 trailers coming in? It just seems outsized.
Yeah, and you know, the Keys has just such a unique geography and unique set of problems that maybe people in Texas or other disaster areas don't have to deal with. You know, it's just limited land, limited accommodations. There was already a housing crisis in the Keys well before the hurricane. And so it's just something it's an opportunity for the county leaders in Monroe to really push affordable housing and to sort of find some silver lining in some of these this housing shortage as we go about the cleanup and the rebuilding process. But in the short term, it's going to be a challenge. And a lot of these workers who are the lifeblood, the backbone, the people who are washing your dishes, mm-hmm. who are tending to your rooms, who are serving your food at the restaurants, they're not going to have a place to live. And so it's this sort of catch-22 when it comes to how the Keys operates.
How do the Keys operate after Hurricane Irma? That's what we're talking about here on the Florida Roundup. 800-743-9576. Do you live in the Keys? Are you a full-time resident? How are you surviving? What are your worries about housing? Do you live in the mainland and go visit the Keys? Maybe have a second home or visit frequently? Or will you go in the next few weeks to try to encourage tourism in the Florida Keys? 800-743-9576, 800-743-WLRN. You can call that number from Key West all the way up to Jupiter and get in here on the Florida Roundup. Speaking with David Ovalle, reporter for our partner, the Miami Herald, and Nancy Klinger, our southernmost reporter for WLRN, usually in Key West, but today in the mainland, on the mainland, in our studios here in Miami. Nancy, what about businesses reopening? The governor proudly visited the Lower Keys to say it was back open for business. Is it truly?
Key West, for sure. I mean, there's a few isolated businesses in Key West that suffered severe damage from, you know, trees falling on them or the roof came off. But for the most part, Key West is up and running. Up the Keys, it's a different story. It's really, you see some restaurants are open, some are not. Some stores are open, some are not. Some suffered damage. Some can't get their staff back for all the reasons David was just talking about.
The staff left because they were ordered to, and the evacuation that happened, thousands of folks in the Keys left. All the trouble about getting back immediately after the storm. But now, back to what?
Right. And if you're not invested either financially with owning property or emotionally from, you know, just wanting to live there, it's hard to see why you would come back.
Really? Yeah. Says somebody who lives in Key West.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Really? Why is that? What's the process?
It's hard. It's really expensive and it's really hard. You know, I spoke about this on Sundial the other day. There's a trainer at my gym who's lived in Key West for 15 years. She rents a place. There's some damage to the roof, but you know, none of her belongings have been hurt. But she's put an offer on a house in Georgia this week, and they're going to leave. And it's just like this was the thing that was just too much.
Yeah. David, how does this potentially reshape the hospitality industry there? We've already known that Miami-Dade transit buses, for instance, run, from Homestead, Florida City, all the way down to the middle to Lower Keys to bring in workers on a daily basis.
Yeah, it's really going to be a challenge, particularly in the Lower Keys, because you can bring in people from South Dade into the Upper Keys, but it's going to be a lot harder to do that, 80 miles down the road, and it's just geographically, it's just such a unique place. You know, I don't know. That's something the county leaders really, and they've been grappling with it for a long time. Now, there are some affordable housing projects that are in the pipeline, and there's others that have been, sort of kind of on hold because there's complaints from the neighbors and there's issues about whether it's going to bring too much growth to the Keys. I mean, you have this weird quandary where they can only hand out so many building permits at any given time because they have to watch how much growth they have, mm-hmm. because they can't they have to be able to evacuate the Keys in case there's a hurricane. So it's this kind of weird cycle where they need people and people are attracted to the Keys for that natural beauty and for that kind of rustic charm, particularly like in the lower Keys and the yep. middle Keys, but they can't bring in that many people. And there's a certain element of not in my backyard type of mentality where, a lot of the residents don't want, apartment buildings on their particular Key because it's going to bring more traffic. It's going to bring more people and more, sort of congestion. So it's a very difficult thing they've been dealing with for a long time, and really it's just going to get worse.
The Keys is a place where you see the balance of modern life and economics with the environment on display right outside your car window or right in front of your feet, depending upon where you're at.
Yeah, to me, I mean, the Keys are all the issues that face South Florida in general, just distilled. We face them in a more concentrated way. And it's, of course, it hits the service workers the hardest because they are making the least, but it also hits the professional classes, your teachers, your journalists.
Yeah, the firefighters.
The firefighters, nurses, yeah. All that. It's hard for them to find a place to live. If the average home to buy a home is $600,000 or $800,000. I mean,
plumbers, electricians, accountants, you name it. Yep. Yeah. Let's go to the phones. 800-743-9576. Hurricane Irma turning a real housing crunch or crisis into an even worse one in the Florida Keys. Yvonne in Big Pine Key, you are on the radio. Thanks for holding on. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you.
Good. How'd you do in the storm?
I need a new roof. I have a lot of damage to the north side of my house. My fence is gone, but I'm really lucky because I do have a house and I have a place to sleep and I have a steady job. And there are far too many people who don't. And this is a real concern. We, a lot of the mobile homes are gone. A lot of houses that were really built strong are gone because tornadoes took them away.
Yeah.
We have far too many people who don't have a place to live. People can't work because they can't even think about how can I work if I don't have a house? And we have a big need here, and the need is not for tourists to come down. I'm sorry, where I am, I live on Big Pine. Where I live, the need for tourism is not there. The need for people who maybe work in the service industry to step over a little bit and work in construction for a little while and help people rebuild their houses, at a fair wage. It makes sense to me.
Yvonne, that's a fair point. In the Lower Keys, Big Pine, the Torches, Cudjoe, the places where the eye really came through and you see that damage. Nan, you mentioned, not all those tourism spots are open. Some of them blown away. Some of them hugely damaged. Some of those kayak rental, kiosks, for instance, those are long gone.
Right. And there's resorts as far up as Isla Mirada that think they might lose the whole season. Mm. I mean, it's pretty widespread. And I'm hearing a lot from people, especially on Big Pine and other areas, that are saying, whoa, let's lay off on this tourism thing. And, they report seeing people in rented convertibles driving down their streets, and that's pretty bad.
Certainly, that can't sit too well with the natives. Yvonne, what do you think you need? What is your key need? What's Big Pine Key need, your neighbors, your friends? Yvonne, still with us? I think we lost her from Big Pine Key. Let's go to Key West. Eric, you are on the Florida Roundup. Eric, you're on the radio. Thanks. Eric, are you with us? All right, we lost Eric there. Yvonne gave voice something, from the resident perspective, certainly in the Lower Keys, that it's not ready for tourists. And here we are in October. The season begins to ramp up over the next several months, really into January. Will it be ready for tourists?
Will the Lower Keys be ready?
Yeah.
I think some places will be, yeah. It won't look like it did in August of this year.
But. Yeah, or last season, for instance, if you got repeat guests.
Yeah, the problem is that to get to Key West, you have to go through the Lower Keys.
Yeah, Eric, back with us in Key West. Eric, that was our fault on the phones. Thanks for holding on. Go ahead.
Yeah, no problem. I just wanted to chime in as far as the housing industry goes and everything in Key West.
I mean, even before the hurricane came, it was already a mess. And I'm kind of hoping that maybe after this, there's going to be a slash on the prices. You know, I'm active duty, and when I got stationed down here, I needed to shell out almost $10,000 to move into a smaller house. And, you know, when you only make like $40,000 a year, that is a lot of money that it's hard for a lot of people to come up with. And in between trying to find places down here now, luckily I was able to find a new home. Mine was flooded out after Irma. And I feel like I'm kind of blessed. I was one of the lucky people to actually find something quickly. But as far as the homes here, there's also a lot of other individuals who lived out in the water on their boats. I mean, their boats are littered all over the place, and you know, I'm not even sure what's going to happen with them. I meet people in town I know that I see almost every day at work who live on their boat. They ask me questions all the time. Or, do you know if we're getting FEMA trailers? Do you know if there's going to be assistance coming down? And I feel awful. I can't even give them an answer.
Eric, David Ovalle from the Miami Herald has some thoughts on this.
Well, there are some short-term ideas for short-term housing that are being floated. You know, one interesting tidbit about the Keys is that there's a lot of homes that are there that are pretty much just vacant because they're vacation homes, they're second homes, they're homes that people come down for in the wintertime. So the Monroe County has actually floated an idea to FEMA about increasing the amount of money it gives per month to for short-term housing to displaced residents so that they may be able to afford you know, staying in one of these nice vacation homes that didn't get you know, damaged too bad in the storm. That's one possible solution. Whether it happens remains to be seen. I mean, but that's, you know, there are a lot of units that are there that are not being used at the moment.
Eric, we appreciate your thoughts from Key West. Take care of yourself, all right?
Thank you.
All right, let's continue in the Keys and Marathon. Paul, you are on the radio. Thanks for holding on. Your thoughts.
Hello.
Hi, Paul.
Hey, hi, Paul. I've got a trailer that got 14 inches of water in it, and that trailer was, and I own the property, and I'm blessed that I own the land that it sits on. However, after, you know, if I lose the inhabitability of this trailer, I can't replace it. And, you know, I have to build, or I have to do a stick built house, and, you know, it's just, it's not affordable for me. We need to come up with a way with the manufactured housing, modulars or whatever, to get these things affordable so I could purchase one and put on my lot. But right now, I'm doing everything I can to sustain this trailer that was placed on this lot in 1968.
Wow.
1968.
Paul, let me ask you, do you have flood insurance for it? Can you get flood insurance for a mobile home?
No,
I don't even know if you can.
No, you can't get it.
You can't get it, yeah. So,
or I couldn't get it.
Has the county come by and spoken to you at all about whether or not your trailer is in good enough shape to continue to live in it?
Yes, I've seen a rep had came through. I'm in the Marathon, in the city of Marathon, so we're separate from the county,
right,
per se.
Right.
However, you know, and basically I can cut the sheetrock out and I can, you know, put the sheetrock back in and do the repairs that I need to do, and the house is, you know, habitable. That's a good thing. You know, but however, you know, I'm just good until the next storm. And I would love to be able to elevate and buy a modular house that would meet the wind load requirements set by the powers that be, but, you know, try to keep it in a affordable $150,000 range. But, you know, when you look at a modular to go on this nice lot that I own outright, you know, it cost me $250,000 to do it.
Yeah.
I can't afford that.
I was just talking to a realtor in Marathon, and he was expressing concern for people just like you, especially if that FEMA 50% rule kicks in, where if the property sustains damage worth 50% of its value, it has to be rebuilt to code, which means elevated, and you couldn't just plop another trailer on the property, even if you could afford that. So that is definitely on the minds of a lot of people in the Keys.
Paul, we appreciate you sharing your thoughts. We're glad to hear from you. Glad that you're doing okay, and take care of yourself, Paul.
thank you for doing a program on that.
Of course, yeah. We got several more calls I want to get to, but this idea of mobile homes is an important one for workforce housing in the Keys. Also, houseboats, an important one for workforce housing. 9 days after Irma, I was in Marathon, and I was able to speak with the Monroe County Assistant Administrator, Christine Hurley. She heads the building department, and we spoke about the return of mobile homes for workforce housing.
They are not legally disallowed. They're not illegal. It's not illegal to add a mobile home to the county.
So, Nan, certainly not a full-throated endorsement of replacing the mobile home stock like Paul and others have. But when you hear from Paul and others talking about the ability to afford to rebuild, it's very difficult
yeah.
to find a solution that's not something that's going to be mobile.
Right. Or insanely expensive.
Or insanely expensive, yeah. In Summerlin Key, Bill is joining us here on the Florida Roundup. You are on the radio, Bill. Thanks for holding on.
Yeah, hi, Tom. Always listen to your show when I'm down here.
Thank you very much.
I'm at Summerlin Key on the airfield here, which was like a forward ops base when Key West was closed, Homestead was closed, everything was closed. And we had all the emergency relief people flying in and out of here with supplies. And all the houses that are built to code have survived. People stayed here during the whole event. But the trouble is, building to code is so expensive that you wonder who can afford to rebuild to code and who can afford to pay those rents. You know, all the service workers can't afford those kind of rents.
Does it make you rethink your presence in Summerlin Key, Bill?
No, not at all. There's been lots of other. George was one that came just 3.5 feet across the whole island. I lost both cars. I've got an aeroplane that I built myself, which I'm rebuilding now. But when you build the code, nothing's going to come off.
Yeah.
The only trouble is...
The cell breaking up there in Summerlin Key for Bill, but we get the gist of it. Thanks for calling in. Thanks for listening. Nan, this isn't the first type of storm to do this kind of damage to the housing stock in the Keys. Is it more pronounced this time around because of where it hit?
Yeah, this is the first one that's done, I would say, this widespread of damage. George was pretty bad for a lot of people, especially in the lower Keys. Wilma was really bad, especially in Key West, but also throughout the Keys because of the storm surge. A lot of people got flood damage and mold and stuff like that from Wilma and lost their cars. but this has been by far, in terms of just wiping out the most vulnerable parts of our housing stock.
David Ovai, are there lessons that folks who live there are drawing from previous storms? Or is, you know, what Nan says coupled with the kind of the real estate interest and the out of Monroe County buyer that's helped fuel and increase the prices, among other things in Monroe County, just something that is off the charts. And we can't go back to previous storm cycles to learn from.
Well, I think it kind of depends who you are and your lands and your experiences before the storm. I mean, you have a lot of people who are recent additions to the Keys and yeah. people who maybe had some damage years ago. But they did okay. But I think, like Nan said, that the destruction, particularly in Summerlin and Kudjoe and Big Pine, those, you know, it's so pronounced that even people who thought their homes were, they could save them. I interviewed several people at the Ocean Breeze trailer park in Marathon where they thought, you know, my place is okay. But then, you know, as the sort of mold started creeping in and just it got really bad, they just couldn't do anything else. And so they can't go back to their homes. So yeah. I think a lot of people who thought maybe they survived okay really are you know, I mean, there's no amount of experience in previous storms that are going to prepare you for your home just being wiped out on any given storm.
Let's go back to Marathon. Karen has been waiting patiently. Karen, you're on the radio. Go ahead.
Hi, sir. Maybe somebody out there can try and help me. I live on a houseboat that is currently submerged with my entire life on it. FEMA came out, and they've given me $1,000, which I'm grateful for, but that doesn't help me in the least. There's no housing here. I was going to try and buy another houseboat, but all of them have damage. The trailers aren't coming. I don't know what my recourse is. There's no place to live here.
Karen, what are you doing then at night?
I'm staying on somebody's couch for another week and a half. I paid half the rent to do that, and then I'm going to be in my car.
Do you have a job?
I do, 3 days a week, and that starts. I work at a hotel, and they're just starting to bring it back up to code, and I can start next Friday, which makes me want to stay.
Mm-hmm.
But I also have to find a place to live. And when I ask FEMA about trailers, they just kind of go, well, we don't know. So there really isn't any housing down here for people that are displaced.
Yeah, that's the story for sure. And there's a lot of, David and I were just talking before the show, there's a lot of couch surfing going on in the Keys right now. I have a new roommate since the storm, who lived on a boat, which sank.
Karen, Karen, do you have insurance? Was the boat insured?
No, sir, it wasn't.
Hmm.
But it was worth $15,000. I have the bill of sale. But it's also my entire life was on my boat. And I'm willing to start over again. But I have to find a roof over my head in order to pick up the pieces to start over again.
Yeah.
And there just is no place to stay down here.
Karen, you've got a job. You've got income. The houseboat, the home is underwater because of Irma. And, just trying to find housing in a squeezed environment. I'm going to put you back on hold, Karen, so we can get your phone number. And if we can have other listeners who happen to have some ideas for you, we'll definitely put you in touch with them.
So, thank you, sir.
Hold on, Karen. David Ovaya, you had some thoughts.
And there's also sort of the flip side to that is you have some people whose homes escaped okay. I interviewed a young woman who is a cook at the Square Grouper, which is, I forget which key it is, Nan would know, but it's in the lower keys, and it got decimated. And they employed 40-something people, but the whole place has just got destroyed. I mean, the water level got really, really high up. There's mold everywhere now. And so her trailer, miraculously, which I believe was on Summerland, did okay. It's livable, but now she can't pay the rent.
Her place of employment was hit.
Now, you know, and they're kind of back, but they obviously there's no customers. There's no, you know, there's no income being made. So now she's in the opposite quandary. So there's just, it's so many layers of misery going on for the most vulnerable people in the Keys right now.
Let's go to Broward County, where Susan has been holding on in Davie. Susan, thanks for holding. You're on the radio.
Hi, I just wanted to put in a thing that I felt the other day when the governor made the speech about come on back and all this stuff. My future daughter-in-law is having her bachelorette party scheduled in Key West in November. And after the storm, they called down there figuring, you know, that they were going to have to find another place. And the people are like, no, we're not open, but we're going to open. Everything's going to be great. You're going to be fine, blah, blah, blah. And she felt a little bit creepy about it, especially the more you keep hearing, you know, you want to go down and help. But part of the fun and part of the whole Keys thing, even when you're going all the way to Key West, is the drive down and you stop and you have a drink here, or you stop and you do a little shopping there. And I'm not sure that it's going to benefit Key West all that much to have people drive all that way through all this devastation and you know, your heart's going to be going out to all these people, and then you're supposed to go down and just be happy-go-lucky and do your thing down in Key West. The whole thing is a little bit skewed to me.
I was having those exact thoughts on my drive up this morning, thinking, wow, they're begging tourists to come back to Key West, and people are going to be driving past and seeing, you know, giant debris piles and destroyed buildings, and it's going to be weird.
Weird and a mixed message. I mean, it could be a challenging message to invite the tourists in and then have inventories at hotels squeezed and some restaurants still closed and activities closed. And Susan, I think as your future daughter-in-law has thought, how can you, you know, have a fun and frivolous kind of weekend celebrating your soon-to-be marriage when you're passing by these, you know, piles and piles of wet carpet and drywall and moldy homes.
I will say this. Yeah. There are service workers in Key West, and they need your money. They need wages. Yeah. They need tips. They need jobs.
They do. I just wonder, though, if overall, say the people, like, because right now, you know, people, they don't want to give deposits back and stuff. You know, it's a little, But then say this affects the way you look at the Key West for the rest of your life. Like, ugh, that was awful. And you never go back.
Yeah.
Like, she may go this time, but she may never go back when that was a favorite place of theirs. So anyway, that was just my contribution.
Susan, an interesting contribution. Congratulations on the pending nuptials as well.
Thank you so much. All right. And my heart goes out to the people in the Keys. It really does.
Yeah,
bye-bye.
Susan and Davey, thanks so much. Nan Klingener, our Southernmost reporter from Key West, who's with us on the mainland here. Tell us kind of the approach that you're hearing, not only from the callers here today on the radio, but as you continue to talk to friends and sources throughout the Keys. There's a stick-to-itiveness always after a storm like this, rebuilding stronger. But the reality, the economic reality of what the Keys has to deal with and the environmental reality is so much more heightened.
Right. Yeah, I was surprised at how many people I talked to in Marathon and Big Pine yesterday who were just absolutely unhesitant. They were saying, absolutely, we're staying. Absolutely, we're rebuilding. Absolutely, we're going to get through this. And these weren't, you know, wealthy second homeowners. Mm-hmm. These are working people, somebody who manages a grocery store or works for a liquor distributor. But they just felt like the quality of life that they have in the Keys, being able to go out to the reef, you know, the friendships, the people, the town, the city, in the case of Marathon, that it's totally worth it to them. And that's why they plan to stay.
Nan Klingener, our Southernmost reporter, usually in Key West with us on the mainland. David Ovalle with the Miami Herald, thanks for sharing your reporting up and down the Keys with us, too. David,
appreciate it. Thank you for bringing the subject to light.
We have more to come here on the roundup, and we're going to stick with Hurricane Irma. How the storm may have been some good news for some sea life, even while it dealt a blow to those making a living off the sea. 800-743-WLRN, 800-743-9576. Hurricane Irma and the environment is next.
We're funded by WLRN members and by Florida City Gas. A natural gas range provides warm meals during inclement weather and if a power outage occurs. Homeowners can learn about energy-saving ideas and how to switch to natural gas at FloridaCityGasRebates.com.
Hi, it's Ray from Car Talk. We want to thank you folks for 30 great years on this station. Well, they were great for us. I'm sure they were slow and painful for you. We've had a lot of fun, but now it's time for us to make room for something new. If you miss us, yeah, right, you can still listen to Car Talk online. Here on the station, we hope you'll join us in welcoming the next generation of great shows, and thanks.
Join us for the New Yorker Radio Hour, Saturdays at 10 a.m., starting in October.
40% of food goes to waste. 20% live in food insecurity. Hungry Harvest uses one problem to solve the other. They deliver farm-to-door produce that would otherwise go uneaten and support donations to local organizations. More at HungryHarvest.net.
Welcome back to the Florida Roundup on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks again for listening this week. It has been almost a month now since Hurricane Irma, and while scientists will study the effect on the environment for years, people making their living off the environment continue trying to just pick up their lives and businesses. How much could the storm help sea life in South Florida, and how much could it hurt those relying on the sea for their livelihoods? That's where we are at now on the Florida Roundup. 800-743-WLRN, 800-743-9576. Your questions about how the environment dealt with Hurricane Irma, the Everglades, Florida Bay. You can tweet us at WLRN. Nancy Klingener is still with us, our Southernmost reporter, with us in studio here in Miami. Jenny Stiletovich covers the environment for our partner, the Miami Herald, with us from our studios inside the Herald newsroom in Doral. Jenny, welcome back to the Florida Roundup. Nice to have you back.
Thanks, Tom.
What areas of the state are still experiencing kind of the after effects of storm surge or flooding from Irma? I know we've got a lot of rain this week, so there's been a lot of flooding this week. But what about the after effects here almost a month after?
Well, because the ground is so saturated, yesterday's rain pretty much had no place to go. We were out at Shark Valley yesterday. The you know, it's still flooded out there. You can't even get down to the visitor center. There's 2 feet of water across the road. The water conservation areas west of Miami-Dade and Broward counties, they have been full. They're even more full now. The Corps is trying to keep the lake levels down, mm-hmm. especially with a new tropical storm kind of coming up the coast, and we've had one sort of lingering here. So I don't know. I would not say that there's storm surge remaining. It's just that we are just very wet right now.
Yeah, wet across all of Florida and certainly South Florida. What about Irma's impact on Florida Bay? You've done a lot of reporting. We've done a lot of reporting on the salinity levels in Florida Bay and the grasses dying off over the past several years. What kind of shape is it in after the storm?
Well, one of the things a hurricane, you know, does is flush out the bay. Fishing guide over in Everglades City described Florida Bay to me as a cul-de-sac where water can sit for years. And it's very shallow, so it evaporates fast, so it gets salty. Then you get a hurricane come along, and especially one as big as Irma, and it just really flushes it out. So what they are seeing is a lot of fish activity. The fish are very active because the water is fresher. And anglers will say fishing is always really good after a hurricane. But when we were out there last week, we were just sort of stunned to see these young tarpon just rolling all over the place. And the storm will also, now is tarpon spawning season. So there are young tarpon that will get pushed back into banks that they had not been in, where they're sort of the biggest thing around. So what I've been told is that in a couple of years, there's going to be a really good tarpon season down here. And the seagrass, again, it flushes things out. We were seeing healthy seagrass rooted. One of the fears is that there's also a lot of dead seagrass that got blown into the bay.
Yeah.
And if that stays and dies, it could add nutrients and cause some sort of bad conditions that start kind of a seagrass die-off, which we had a couple of years ago, or reignite that.
This flushing of Florida Bay, Nancy Klinger, really, I think, highlights kind of the dichotomy of the storm, especially for the Florida Keys. It could spawn a very healthy sport fishing industry, which has been choked over the past many years because of salinity levels and some of the dead seagrass. But at the same time, those sport fishermen are dealing with the housing crunch that we've been talking about earlier on the program.
Right, and in some cases, where they can dock their boats, which is another issue.
Yeah, which may not be around, absolutely. And what about on the West Coast, Jenny Stiletovich? You were over there recently reporting in Everglades City and some of those places with towns that are really directly tied. Their fate's just tied to the water.
Yes, and those places are, it looks like the Keys smaller, but they're just mounds of debris, and everybody, they didn't have wind damage, they had mud damage. So they had water levels inside their homes at 4 or 5 feet. Everything was coated with mud, so you basically have everybody's belongings out on the roadside now.
Yeah.
They have the fishing is good. It's just convincing people to come over. They also rely heavily on tourists to the national parks. Big Cypress just reopened its visitor center today and some campgrounds. But Everglades National Park is still closed over there. So they're really hoping that the parks reopen because that's the big tourist draw for them.
And Nancy, you were just mentioning there's a new season that's right around the corner.
Right. For commercial fishing, stone crab season opens on October 15th, and those traps just went in the water because I guess they get a 10-day soak. But a lot of those guys are also lobster fishermen, and their gear got blown all over, which is a huge problem for them economically. It's also an environmental problem because that's now marine debris.
Yeah. What are their hopes for crab season? Any idea what they can expect?
I don't know yet. Yeah. I'll be reporting on that next week.
Jenny, any sense of what crab season could look like?
The mayor of Everglades City is a crabber, and he is very optimistic.
That's good to hear.
They're good to hear. A mayor and a crabber, welcome to Everglades City. Jenny Stiletovich, covering the environment for our partner, the Miami Herald. Jenny, always a pleasure to have you back on the program. Thanks for sharing your reporting with us.
Thank you.
Nancy Klinger, good to see you in the flesh from our southernmost bureau. Welcome back to the mainland.
Thanks, Tom.
Here for a short visit. That'll do it for the Florida Roundup this week. We thank you for listening. Thank you for calling. It is a program that is produced each week here on WLRN by Bridget O'Brien. Our engagement editor is Katie Lepre. Teresa Frontato is our digital director. Our news director is Terrence Shepard. Alicia Zuckerman is our editorial director. WLRN's program director is Peter J. Meritz. Our general manager is John Labonia, and our technical supervisor this week and each week, the man behind the buttons making everything happen, is Jason Zabka. Thank you, Jason, for your attention. I'm Tom Hudson. You can always join us online at WLRN.org. On social media, look for us on Facebook and Twitter. Thanks for calling, and thanks for listening this week.
Statewide hour of the Florida Roundup is next right here on 91.3 WLRN and HD1 Miami Fort Lauderdale, 91.5 WKWM and HD1 Marathon Key West, 90.7 WFLV HD2 West Palm Beach, and 101.9 NPR for the Palm Beaches.
The New World Symphony and artistic director Michael Tilson Thomas opened their 30th anniversary season with a program of Russian masterworks starring piano virtuoso Yujo Wang, performing showstopper works by Rachmaninoff and Prokofiev with her trademark panache. The program also features Prokofiev's Romeo and Juliet. You can join MTT and fellows of the New World Symphony, America's Orchestral Academy, for the season opener October 14th and 15th at the New World Center. Details at nws.edu.
We're funded by WLRN members and by the law firm of Stearns Weaver Miller Weisler Aledeff and Citizen PA, supporting the Miami Foundation's 50th anniversary of fostering creativity through support of the arts and pursuit of new ideas. Learn more at miamifoundation.org/50.